Sometimes when I describe St. Lydia's to people who aren't familiar with this church, I say, it's kind of a weird church. Some of you might agree. After all, in this part of the world anyway, it's not a typical church-going experience to find yourself washing dishes, which we will do later, or reading poetry, which we will do later, or listening to stories from your table neighbors about fears, hopes, death, birth, divorce, illness, family trauma, all kinds of things that sometimes come up in sermon sharing at St. Lydia's. And yet, when St. Lydia's was being dreamed up so many years ago, the goal of its founders wasn't shock value or to be bizarre. The elements of a dinner church service spring from some very ancient ways of being together. The prayer that we sing around the bread is adapted from a first century church document called the Didache. Humans have been eating and washing up at tables like these, basically since humans have existed. And the practices of sharing stories and opening ourselves up to vulnerability, well, I think any community builder will tell you that those are some of the most important and crucial experiences of being human. So then if all the individual building blocks are so normal, are so drawn from church history or from the everyday experience of being human, why do I sometimes describe St. Lydia's as weird? Maybe it's because most churches I've been a part of simply adhered to a different pattern. Worship services at most other churches I've been to feature a single story, usually from the person delivering the sermon, with no other voices sharing. They feature songs that draw your eyes to a page or to a stage, instead of to the eyes of the person standing across from you in the circle. With many other traditional churches, you might make a lunch plan for after the service, or maybe there's a potluck in the basement afterwards, rather than knowing that the service itself will deliver you a hearty meal. To be honest, most other church services I've sat through in my life have caused me to draw inward, rather than open myself outward. They have often made me feel a little isolated, sitting in a pew surrounded by people whose names I don't know. The irony is, though I do experience openness and connectedness while in the realm of St. Lydia's here at 304 Bond Street, but sometimes that feeling, the feeling of openness and the feeling of connectedness, can lead to a very different kind of loneliness or isolation when I try to consider St. Lydia's part in the wider church. Mm. Sometimes it feels like our uniqueness leads to unique struggles, some of which seem unfamiliar or even distasteful to leaders in our wider denomination. Our denomination is called the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, or the ELCA. Sometimes the struggles that we have seem even unfamiliar or distasteful to our very local Metro New York Synod. St. Lydia's is certainly not very much like the kind of Christianity touted by people like Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, Michael Ferris, J.D. Vance. But sometimes it even feels pretty different from what's held up by those on our team, so to speak. Here at St. Lydia's, we've been scolded by deans, ignored by bishops, told we aren't Lutheran enough to sit with the Lutherans, and not Episcopal enough to sit with the Episcopalians. Hi! But from our vantage point at 304 Bond Street, our view can get a little small. My view can get a little small. So I want to zoom out and introduce you to a few other weirdos, all of whom share a very special connection to St. Lydia's. One is called Queer Enough. Queer Enough is the name of a spiritual community in Portland, Oregon. It's for folks whose experience of queerness intersects with race, gender, class, ecology, disability, and spirituality, while actively practicing anti-racism and anti-colonization. They host crafting gatherings, a private queer gym, and opportunities for mutual aid. queer enough views doubt, questioning, and unknowing as sacred. There's also something called Shobie's Table, and that they're based in St. Paul, Minnesota. They are a community of diners, volunteers, staff, and supporters of a pay-as-you-can food truck that makes God's love edible on the streets of their community. Shobie's Table cooks delicious, nutritious, from-scratch meals as a catalyst for love and hospitality to all that they encounter. Anamkara, which means soul friend in Gaelic, aims to build a digital community that bridges the pulpit and the pew. They're hoping to both speak to people who would never set foot in a brick and mortar church, people in the midst of transitions in life, as well as be a resource and support for pastors who need inspiration and worship experiences and a community apart from the parishes at which they pastor. Mm-hmm. Then there's Echoes, and they're up in Bellingham, Washington, and North Cascades Wild Church in Marble Mount, and Up Wild in Marquette, Michigan, and New Life in Dripping Springs, Texas. And all of those are worshiping communities that gather outside in nature. Their sanctuaries are standing underneath oak trees, or in open fields, or on the shoreline. Instead of stained glass windows, their congregants look upon mountains and clouds. Columbia City Church of Hope in Seattle, Washington, says that they are a church for the old, the young, the gay, the straight, the trans, the doubters, believers, the fence-sitters, the activists, the scientists, the poets, and the slackers. Since they first started in 2010, it has been their dream to live into the vision of shared community space and affordable housing. Thanks to the gift of a previous congregation at the site where they meet, they are now moving forward toward this vision. They will be developing a mixed-use building consisting of affordable housing for families, a child development center, and a worshiping community space. And finally, there's Good Trouble Church. Good Trouble is a BIPOC and trans-led grassroots congregation in central Baltimore of leaders who are changing the world. They were founded in 2020, and they were started by and continue to draw together a community of people who are traditionally marginalized and made vulnerable by systemic oppression, redlining, and the war on drugs. Centering the leadership and following the visions of those most directly impacted by unjust system, they celebrate Blackness and indigeneity, recovering ancestral wisdom and practices in order to rise and resist the death-dealing forces of white supremacy and colonization. The gospel of love and liberation is their guide, as they engage in their own style of gospel-centered, resilience-based organizing that they have cultivated over these years, living out in the world as it should be in their neighborhood. As they care for each other and imagine a future for God's people that is just, they organically question and upend existing oppressive systems. As you heard, all these communities are from across the United States. They are each serving their own local communities in unique ways, as St. Lydia's is, and they are all affiliated with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, of which St. Lydia's is a part. They are all Lutherans, like St. Lydia's. They are all a little weird, like we are a little weird. These folks that I just introduced you to are just a handful out of 24 ELCA communities who have signed on as partners of a project called Future Church Pilots, which is funded by the Lilly Endowment. When the Lilly Endowment put out a call for proposals around the theme of compelling preaching, our former pastor, Christian Sharon, had an idea to gather new missional communities, as he called them, and congregations who are completely reimagining themselves, scattered across the United States. They already know a lot about compelling preaching, and for that matter, compelling forms of Christian community. Our denomination, the ELCA, skews older and white, and it has been shrinking in size for decades. The contrast couldn't be starker between the wider denomination and the Future Church pilot cohort, whose participants lean more BIPOC, queer, young, and often led by femme-identified or non-binary people. The Lilly Endowment Foundation liked this idea, and we got a huge grant to do this work. Christian continues to direct the project from Chicago, where he lives now, and I am the project manager. This grant funds my salary. Mm-hmm. It's what's enabling me to work full-time at St. Lydia's until 2027. Through the project website, several internal convenings this summer and next summer, and through a national conference slated for 2027, it's our plan to help these communities share what they're learning with the wider ELCA and beyond. Later this month, two initial cohorts of this project will gather to meet, one in Portland, Oregon, and one in Chicago, to share in learnings, ask each other questions about how to survive as weird churches in this world we live in, but also to delight in one another. After all, what's more delightful than a bunch of weirdos getting together to enjoy one another's company? I'll be at both conferences as the project manager. In Portland, I'll be joined by Melissa, Linda, and Taylor, who will represent St. Lydia's. In Chicago, Deborah is joining. In the passage from Acts that we read a few minutes ago, the assembled crowd was utterly amazed by what they saw and the way that they heard the Spirit of God moving in the room where the apostles were gathered. Sometimes at St. Lydia's, I feel a little bit amazed. Last Sunday, I was a little bit amazed. Dinner church out back last Sunday was attended by some folks local to New York, as usual, and also a group of ministers from Arkansas, and two ministers from across the world, all the way from Aotearoa, New Zealand. There was an 11-year-old in attendance, playing the Shruti box, a retiree greeting newcomers, and about 18 people of various ages in between. For many people last week, it was their first time at dinner church. For others, it was probably closer to their 500th. Everyone came with different joys and sorrows, with a different mood and hope and trepidations. Yet, Elizabeth, you song-led last week, right?
Yes, I did.
Elizabeth taught us songs, and we made beautiful harmonies together. And Andy cooked a very nourishing meal, and we ate side by side around tables. Larissa preached a sermon, and three or four voices piped in afterwards to share their own stories. We assembled after eating to wash every single dish and restore the space to cleanliness and order. In 10 days, I'll be astounded again at the way a room full of strangers will come together for another dinner church service, this time in a hotel conference room. It will be a little different than dinner church looks tonight. The hotel we'll be in is historic and doesn't allow candles. We're making a plan. And their event staff will cater the dinner, which will feel a little fancy. Oh. But we will sing, and we will pray, and we will share stories. Strangers will call each other by name and offer each other bread and say, "This is my body." And then we'll spend the next couple days connecting more deeply to each other and to what it means to do church in our own weird ways. We'll ask questions, find commonalities and differences, reflect on successes and failures, hopes and aspirations. I will look across the room at people from all across the country and hear about the weird way they do church in their communities. And I think I'll feel a little less alone. I think it will make St. Lydia's feel a little less weird and a little less unique and a little more part of something that's larger and something that's growing. We don't make the church this way because, as it says in the scripture passages, we're drunk or because we're attention seeking. I think that as the Spirit of God moves through this space and through the people inside of it, the language of dinner church is what emerges. And the language is different at other weird churches, but it's all from the same Spirit. The work might feel weird at times, but to me, it's very beautiful. And importantly, I no longer feel quite as alone in the weird work. We have co-conspirators all over the place. In Portland, in Seattle, in Marquette, in St. Paul, in Baltimore, and beyond, and beyond. We share the sermon at St. Lydia's. We'll spend a couple of moments in silent reflection, and then when I ring the bell, you'll be invited to share a story or an experience that was brought up for you by reading the text or listening to my message. And we share stories and experiences and not opinions, and we don't crosstalk with each other because Jesus told stories And stories help us to know one another better. So we'll begin in silence.